welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it's now or never, folks. I can't emphasize that enough. And, oh, by the way, I'm sorry about the frog. My wife went to the pet store, brought back a frog, and I just can't get rid of it. Anyway, I know I probably shouldn't quit my day job, right? Since I'm not going to be able to make money being a comedian. All that being said, let me just plug on some really important things because I want to get back into the Constitution and I want to kind of cover the ground that we... I don't want to rehash the ground, but what I want to do is I kind of cover how many petitions we were able to acquire just by going through the Constitution. And when I say petitions, these are additional petitions to the petitions that I identified with the Bill of Rights. And so before I get into anything, before I even do my obligatories, we're in the final rush for the election. And right now, I'll just say this because I have not found any other candidates out there so committed on the Constitution. It's not that they aren't there. I would love to have some last-minute endorsements. But it takes a lot. It takes the character of a true public, I'll just say, not even just public servant, a true righteous person will not put themselves above others. And so, you know, when we talk about live organ harvesting, we talk about the evil of that like we did, you know, last week on Feedback Friday. We point out the fact that, you know, there's people that get on an airplane that obviously you have to believe that you're better. You're a part of a caste system that is the global elite because you can actually fly and obtain the body parts of another person and kill them so that you can live longer. That is the... And the state even supports this. This isn't some nefarious little ring of marauders. This is the state that is going out of its way to find dissidents and those, you know, people that don't agree with what they're doing. Oh, that's okay. We got a place for you. And we'll make it so that you stay nice and healthy so that we can sell your body parts. It's hard to fathom that type of evil. I know the framers couldn't. Anyway, back to the politicians, though. I know that Paul Venable could use more help. And as a matter of fact, what he's doing, you've heard me say this for quite a while. If you've been listening to me for quite a while, for the Constitution Party, so I want to go down these paths of saying things, but I don't want to say them inappropriately because sometimes I get hammered by people that, you know, take it out of context. And actually, it was really more of a poor delivery on my part. So trying to be better in my delivery, I will tell you that I've identified shortcomings with all parties. All parties have shortcomings because they fail to hold their public servants accountable. Their bylaws do not have a process of holding them accountable. You need to update your bylaws. You also need to update your bylaws to remove any exclusivity. I think it's great to actually have people going. If we believe in free market, but you don't believe in free parties or open parties, then aren't you a hypocrite? Are you not a hypocrite? I mean, there may be some good things that you might like that actually could improve. If we made a party that was the end all of all parties, would that not obsolete all parties? Yeah, absolutely it would. If everybody agreed that this party does everything and supports, I mean, the only people that would be against this party would be those who are against our Constitution, individual liberty, and individual sovereignty. There you go. So anyway, I know that he needs some help. I need know that he needs support. So I'm going to be plugging him. Now, if you have somebody that's, you know, equally constitutional, that's going to get there, that will actually make a commitment to step down if they violate their oath of office, if they fail to support the Constitution, and they understand these things, they understand what's constitutional, what isn't constitutional, they understand the First Amendment right to petition, they understand these key things that you have been indoctrinated not to know or understand. And that's for a very specific purpose, folks. So, When we reach down into our pockets as we get some gas or what have you, if you've got something to spare, please give Paul Venable some love. And as a matter of fact, what I really want to say is what he's doing with the party there, because this is why I started to talk about the party. What he's doing with the party, the Constitution Party, he is creating an example of a party that's focused on the Constitution, a party that's not focused on a myopic agenda. So one of the things that I've learned, and I don't want to talk about it now, is that the Constitution Party has this, at least the old guard, the genesis behind the Constitution Party was really a myopic issue. And it became a myopic issue in the beginning of the 2000s when there was a, let's just say, a schism, a religious schism. And so anyway, as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Again, if you know a candidate that is solid on the Constitution, we would love to endorse them. But I'm telling you, I do not give candidates wiggle room, especially at the federal level. You must fully comply to the Constitution. There's no sidestepping this. If you're not going to be willing to step down and sign a commitment or make oral pledges that you actually commit so everybody knows you're committed to supporting the Constitution, that you will not support agendas, you will not violate the Constitution. And when called out, and I'll call you out and I'll prove how you've done it, because I do it all the time, folks. So if you've got one, just let me know. We'll be happy to start talking to them and bringing them in and, you know, expanding your purview of who's constitutional, who isn't constitutional. So anyway, let me dive into these petitions that we kind of covered. And actually, I'm only going to give you the overview of these petitions. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 total petitions. We ended up finishing in Article 1, Section 8, and actually the last two powers identified petitions. And before that, we had petitions that identified the representation of 30,000 people. We have a petition that actually, when Congress has the power to make, at any time, to make law or alter such regulations regarding the elections of representatives and senators, I want you, and we already talked about this, that this does not include electors. I have a problem with the federal government actually stepping in at this point in time. And I think that there needs to be a clause here that this is only in case of an invasion, that, you know, we're under siege, something like that, because there's no reason why the federal government needs to actually protect its own. Because if they're doing bad things, then they can't create conditions that, you know, make it hard for us to remove them. Because I see that that's what's happening today, and we've got to stop that. The next petition is that each house gets to determine the rules and proceedings and punish its members. And we actually need to and expel members for bad behavior. We need to add to this that any member that violates their oath in any way, that fails to support the Constitution in any way, must be removed. We need to start adding they must be removed immediately and banned, because there's like 5-6 sections where we've got to do that. The next one is the same one. Or actually, no, this is regarding the judgment and secrecy, and I should say, the, you know, the proceedings and publishing those types of things unless it's got secrecy. And we need a petition to actually say that they still have to do that. They just have to provide this to the each state. They still have to publish these things. And instead of putting it out, they have to make it available to each state legislature. And we need to actually get state legislature oversight over the government as far as what they're doing behind these closed doors. They should not have this, you know, full autonomy from the states. Not at all. This has got to end. And so it's the same thing with the classification levels and all of that. So that's a separate petition. So the publication of this stuff and then a separate petition with the oversight, okay? So moving down to, let me see here. What's the next petition we got to go? This one is in Section 6, and it is the fact that there's no authorization within the Constitution for Congress or any public servant to have a, let me just say this, retirement. The only people that receive benefits and or retirements after their contributions to the government were the military. That was it. You know, when they walked away from office, they walked away with what they came with. They came with their clothes, they came with their books, whatever. They took that stuff with them. That's it. They don't take golden parachutes. They don't have those things. If they want those things, then they have to amend those things. We've got to make it so that it's great to be in the federal, you know, public service side on this. But we can't make it so that these people become our, you know, elitist and become a new level of monarchy for us and our us minions and their pawns. But anyway, when we come back, I'll wrap up these petitions and then we'll get into the remainder of Section 8 of Article 1. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so where were we? Okay, looking at the petitions, right? That's where we were. And we were looking at the petitions over the secrecy and so forth. The next petition is in Article 7, and it talks about bills, that bills will originate. Now, by the way, These are petitions that I ended up adding that I, as I was reading, I go, you know, I didn't have time to kind of interject or pause. But this bill is dealing with objections. And if a bill goes forward and the president vetoes it, this talks about how two-thirds of the House, of both houses, can override a presidential veto. However, there needs to be added language to this. So many of these petitions are actually amendments to the Constitution that the states need to push Congress into inserting. And the best way to do this is via these First Amendment petitions. But what we need is a petition that two-thirds of Congress cannot overpower a presidential veto if the president calls the bill a violation of the Constitution, which then would then require the bill to be approved by the states themselves. And so this way we keep the federal government, because back in those days, you know, the access. So one of the things we'll get into is they actually talk about the you know, how difficult it is in some of Madison's writings, how difficult it was to communicate. It was not something that could be done in a timely manner. So this is why they gave all of these types of powers with less restrictions. And I believe we can put more restrictions on the federal government today. There's no doubt in my mind. And so this is one of the bills that will do that. And the next bill that will do that is that every bill passed that is later identified as a direct violation to the Constitution, all legislators who voted for the bill must be removed and banned from public service because they violated their oath. And now the 14th Amendment with the Section 3 requires it. In addition to that, the president must be impeached, removed, and banned for signing such a bill. So in other words, it keeps the pressure on the president to ensure that everything being done is constitutional. Folks, if we don't allow our public servants the latitude to kill us, oppress us, and take over and rule us with corruption, the better we make it, the harder we make it for them to do that, the less desirable public service becomes for corrupt, you know, criminals and so forth. And actually, it becomes a great opportunity for good people to lead us down a path of even more autonomy, more support, and more liberty. How would it be if we had liberty with energy? How would it be, you know, where government isn't using energy, where we can reduce government to a point to where we don't have to have certain EPAs at all? Folks, we can get there. It's just a matter of changing our behavior and changing our paradigms. We don't have to be destructive to the earth. We don't have to be destructive to each other. And this is not about a Green New Deal. This is about just smart government and smart people doing what's right. And I'm not talking about demanding us getting away from fossil fuels and so forth. We have the ability to do things. And I'm not going to get into that until probably either my deathbed or what have you. And still, I would have a problem doing that because certain things take off by corrupt means, and next thing you know, the people are becoming oppressed by even greater tyranny. And so in Section 8, these are the last two petitions we got. In Section 8, one of the petitions that I came up with was to constitute tribunals inferior to the Superior Court. In other words, federal district courts, so that the states would have a court to go into. We need a petition to ensure that there is a full vetting of every case going in the doors of a federal court that's coming out of, as a matter of fact, to make sure that no state court is being bypassed, first off. In other words, people walk straight in, because I've actually seen that happen, and we've seen that happen. We have seen that happen. Now, it's okay if it is literally a case for the federal government and not the state government. In other words, it falls under their jurisdiction. But we need we need to put a institution. We need to have excuse me. We need to have an intercession, or we need to have an something in front of that door to ensure that the only things that are going in belong in the federal court system. Because there's too many times the judges have gone and reached out and pulled things in that they should not be doing. And so we and the lawyers and the judges, this is how they've aggrandized themselves. We have way too many lawyers and way too many judges. And the best way to get rid of them is to make it so that there's, you know, there's, they just can't try every case 150,000 times, especially if there's no jurisdiction over it. Anyway, so the next petition is to define and punish felonies or piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, at least that portion. And this needs to be clarified that these are the only laws, the only crimes other than, and as a matter of fact, I think we need to actually break out, it is my recommendation to break out the very specific powers delegated to the federal government over what crimes they have jurisdiction over. You clarify this, then everybody's going to scratch their head and go, hold on here. What you're telling me is they don't have jurisdiction over kidnapping? They don't have jurisdiction over terrorism? Well, that would fall under, maybe national security if it was actually terrorism. But there's way too much latitude here, because somebody that support, I mean, they're calling people that support the Constitution terrorists. Come on, folks. We've got to clarify all of this, and we've got to actually start tying their hands, the federal government's hands, from being able to misconstrue all of these things and aggrandizing their power over us. We have power over them. They don't have unlimited power over us. Very, very finite, very limited. So that kind of wraps up, because that's where we left off specifically, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high sea and offenses against the laws of nations. And so now we're on, what is this? Because I want to call this subpower or power 10 that's enumerated in section 8, to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. And so I want to add a petition here regarding the capturing of private property, because private property and the confiscation of private property by the federal government cannot be condoned. And so we cannot, because that's what they've done. And so we need to be able to shut that down, because they're robbing from everybody. They should not be able to do that type of punishment. Anyway, the next one, the 11th power, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for longer than a term than 2 years. Now, we also have to add to this that there must be a mission statement. What do I mean by this? We actually have to require a mission statement for what this army is supposed to be doing. In other words, do we really need an army for 40, 50, 60 years to occupy Germany? Do we? We need to get out of Germany. I mean, the fact that we're still in Germany, we're still in Italy, we're still in Japan, post-World War II. Come on, folks. This is just an excuse to actually maintain this. As a matter of fact, I've said this time and time and time and time again. Our foreign policy is, if you want liberty, if you want us to support your liberty, folks of the world, you need to get your government either aligned with us or petition to become a state. If you can't get them to become, you know, to offer the freedoms and liberties that you deserve as a human being and be able to protect your inalienable rights, then you need to petition to us to become a state in the United States, and then your state will be an independent and sovereign state under this state, where you too will be protected with your individual privileges and immunities. In other words, this is how, you know, we will move forward. We're not going to enter into wars anymore. You want to die? You want to let these people, you know, push you into these wars? Okay, it's on you. And so if you really think about it, if, and I believe America is ready for this paradigm, if you really think about it, I honestly see this paradigm as the paradigm that kind of creates this, aha, we told you so with Armageddon, Israel, and all of that. Because bottom line, if Israel doesn't want to be a state in the United States and be basically be subjugated to the few laws that we have and to have and enjoy its autonomy in a Republican form of government based on, you know, the Constitution, our constitutional laws, then okay, so be it. It's the same thing with all states in the Union, folks. It's the same thing with all countries throughout the United States. If we want to alleviate wars, I mean, look at what we did in the United States. Europe has been ravaged with wars, and they've had this union and all these other things, and look, they're still being affected because they don't have what we have. Anyway, we'll be right back after these messages.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I hope I'm not overplaying this whole concept of foreign policy. I hope you, and I don't think I am. I think that most people are starting to actually look at and evaluate where we are going and where we've been and why we're far better off in allowing states to transition. Because first off, they have to be friendly. I mean, they have to basically commit to becoming not just an ally, but becoming a part of the union. And so basically, you know, it moves them away from the perils of their other associations. In other words, they'll no longer have control over their own foreign policy. They won't be able to make treaties. All treaties that these states have made, you know, that have been either to their own demise or what have you, really go away when they become a state in the United States. Those alliances, like with Taiwan, the alliances and whatever they've had in agreement with China goes away. And now they fall under the United States alliance and trades and so forth. Folks, excuse me, you want to put China on its heels. You want to put these despots that are ruling and killing their own people, whether that be Russia, whether it be China, it doesn't matter. And any other little despot that's popping up. These states, the best policy, you know, and I do not want to see people die. I don't want this to happen. People are far better off, you know, falling under our wing than anything else. And it may take us a little while, but we're better off pulling back and saying, look, we have a proven system. And especially as when we get to this point of being able to do this, we will be in the process of already getting rid of our corruption and making sure that any government that comes in that possess, you know, let's just say Ukraine, that already has and has been steeped in corruption because of its life with the former Soviet Union and all of the corruption that the KGB, everything they've been doing. Anyway, like I said, I don't want to overplay this one power of raising and supporting armies. But the whole point is that there needs to be a clear, definitized purpose for that army. And it's supposed to actually go and commit to fighting a very specific war, doing something, and you maybe extending it. But the plan is that we're going to go fight and win a war in 1 year. If that doesn't work out, then what should happen is there needs to be a transition of that army falling underneath the Navy. And as a matter of fact, because what is the next power? To provide and maintain a Navy. There's our national security, folks. The Navy is the national security for everything external of the United States. The real intent of forming an army was to be fighting wars, you know, and skirmishes of people attacking us. The projection of an army and the creation of an army to go external, to go fight, it really should be done underneath the auspices and underneath the controls of the United States Navy. Oh, and we have a Marine Corps to do that. And so this Marine Corps will support and or augment the needs and operations of fighting that war. But we don't need to have an Air Force. The Air Force, the existing strategic commands of the Air Force, need to be integrated into the Navy, period. There's no amendment to the Constitution to say we're creating an Air Force. There is a strategic need for it, and therefore the only entity. Why have they created an Air Force? Why did they create a Space Force? Why did they create an Army? Why did they create so many unique stovepipe forces in the armed forces? Why? So that officers have an opportunity to, you know, gain stars and become generals. Because if you only have one, the Navy, then, you can only have so many admirals. And that's it. You know, we don't need a duplication of personnel controls. We don't need a duplication of administrative bodies in D.C., such as the headquarters of the Army, headquarters of the Navy, headquarters of the Marine Corps, and so forth. I mean, and the headquarters of the Marine Corps actually falls underneath the Navy. But I'm just telling you that we need to work very hard in consolidating that, because that's a great way of cutting costs, a huge way of cutting costs, only doing what we need instead of creating positions and the structure to actually accommodate the career aspirations of individuals. That has been a big part of our corruption. The only reason government has gotten that big is to accommodate and to help and allow more and more. And this is how we get more and more bad generals. Because, you know, when you have to start filling so many positions, when all of a sudden I wouldn't say that the candidate list is great. But, you know, the broader it gets, the more likely you're going to be putting in people like Zinni. Because look at what happened to Anthony Zinni. The guy was a great guy. I served under him. But he got corrupted by the Clintons. He was a part of the Clinton machine. Anyway, and that's what politics do. As a matter of fact, I have a clear rule. If you are or have been an officer in the armed forces, I don't believe that you should have this clear path going into public service. I question you, because in the military, politics occurs in on both sides of the rank structure, but officers are more often than not political than they are actually military. And it's all about positions. It's all about policies. You know what? Instead of the law, instead of what we should be doing. And this is where I've heard, you know, unfathomable comments and so forth. I've digressed. So they have a constitutional responsibility to provide for the Navy. It only makes sense that we only have a Navy. That's it. We don't need to have a force called something different. The Navy has aircraft. The Navy can take on all strategic roles and fold all of what the Air Force and Space Force is doing underneath the Navy. Oh, and by the way, NASA. If the Navy's, if we're to have research and development for space travel, for, because that's all strategic interest, it should be under the Navy. It should all be housed under the Navy, period. That's what's in the Constitution, folks. The next one, the 13th power, to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. Now, land and naval forces doesn't mean that there's two separate branches there. It is one branch of service, all under the Navy. Because does the Navy not have the Marine Corps? Is that not a land force? Yes. And so this all pertains to the Department of the Navy, and it should. And we need to actually, we need to start putting perspective on what they talked about being an army, because an army was an enforcement of the law too. And when they talked about a standing army, they wanted to make sure that the federal government had no authority to enforce their own laws. They did not want a standing army. And so a standing army has nothing to do with a military force. It has everything to do with governments enforcing its own laws, period. And this is right there in the Virginia ratification debates. We just covered this. This is why covering the ratification debates leading into the Constitution is just so, it's awesome. We have this ability to actually just turn right back and go, we talked about this 3 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, whatever. Anyway, and boy, wouldn't it be great if somebody was helping me, you know, to actually give, you know, these little synopsises of what each of my shows tell you. Because I'm too busy helping you. I'm doing this and then I'm helping, calling and so forth. What do you want me to do? You want me to work in a bubble and just do my shows and keep my website up? Or do you need my help? So we have to start either working together. And that's why I say I need people's help. Write down what you're hearing in the show. Send it to me and say, hey, this is what you covered. You know, would you add this to this? Because I only do my show updates, or I only post my shows usually only once a week, maybe sometimes every other week. And I do that because I just don't have the time. You know, you hear me say I'm going to fire my IT guy. I am my IT guy. Again, I'm just being funny, and I know that I, you know, don't quit my day job because I'm not going to make a living being a comedian, because I guess I'm not that funny. But that's okay. I believe in levity, and I think levity has a place. So now that they've listed, as a matter of fact, if you kind of go through this, and if I actually colored these petitions, and if I covered, I got 1, 2, 3 that we've already covered that had to do with war. And as a matter of fact, 4, the 10th power, or the 10th subsection of Section 8, starts with the Declaration of War. And actually, if you look at 9, the define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high sea and offenses against the laws of nations, that's external too. So 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and now 14 and 15, come on, folks, that's a lot of, you know, everything focused on war and external powers. That's it. When we start looking at before that, 1 through 8, you know, we're talking about some structures, post offices, post roads, those types of, I mean, come on. These things are more administrative and they're, you know, kind of benign. They're not great powers where all of a sudden they're able to aggrandize themselves. Okay, so when we come back, we're going to actually get into this little thing called the militia, and we're going to get into how the federal government should be interfacing and supporting this militia, and we're going to be talking more about redefining the militia constitutionally, because they did a really crappy job other than the ratification base. We'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, folks, so now we're going to be talking about the militia, and I want to be clear here. The Constitution delegates the only authority to enforce the Constitution. This is the divine hand of providence. It's almost like, who enforced the laws in Israel when somebody committed adultery? When somebody committed some moral sin or something and it required stoning, did the Sadducees have to go out and stone the person? No, the people did. And so here in our Constitution, the people are empowered and are required to support the Constitution and enforce its laws that are constituted. In other words, we have the reason why they have perverted this part of the Constitution was to keep you from stopping them from enforcing bad laws that you would never enforce, that are unconstitutional, like the EPA, like many of the things that they are trying to enforce today, like the IRS. Remember, the IRS was not created when the Whiskey Rebellion rose and required the militia to go and enforce this law. The reason why most people and the reason why libertarians get away with lying and obscuring facts about government is when they tell you taxation is theft, that gets you to believe taxation is immoral and wrong. Taxation is necessary for any government to function and operate. Do you expect people to actually go and give time without any form of compensation? Do you expect people to be like GR and do all of this at no compensation? I've never asked people to compensate. When I went out to Montana, the good people there bought some of my books, and I even got a contribution. But I didn't put my hand out and say, "You want me here? You got to pay me." And we're only talking about just compensating me for my gas, compensating me for, you know, my expenses. Now, are you expecting government to actually function, to actually operate without this, you know, this money, the ability? So where do they get the money? It has to come from taxes. The problem is we don't have a taxation problem, and taxation is not theft. We have a spending problem, and the fact that they're taking from you because they want to spend money on doing all sorts of things to control you. That's what it's all about. So, folks, I want to be clear. When we sit down and we actually, you know, start going through the Constitution, this is where clarity comes. If you want further refining clarity on the Constitution, the ratifications are doing this. And this is why, as I'm going through this and as I'm creating these petitions out of the Constitution, and prior to the reading of the ratifications, when I had already gone through the Constitution in general sense of laws today and so forth, and how they violate the Constitution and the essence of our government and the essence of the liberties that we're supposed to be enjoying. This is why this is all so important. And I can't impress upon you what a national treasure your ratification debates are. They should have been shared from each state with all new states coming into the Union, basically informing the state, this is how we defined this Constitution. This is how we place context to these specific words. So, anyway, so subsection 14, Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. We need a petition in this as a clarity. This would be a part of, and this is why I'm saying why we need to definitize the Constitution. Definitizing the Constitution would clarify that all enforcement agencies other than the militia must be disbanded, and only the militia is the authorized entity of enforcing the laws of the Union, period. The next petition and the next section, because obviously each section we're going to be delivering or bringing forth these petitions for you, right? Especially if it's not being abided by. That's definitely not being abided by. And so The next one is to provide for organizing an army and disciplining them, for organizing, arming, my mistake, not provide for organizing an army. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. Okay, do you hear what I said? I just listed three very specific responsibilities. This is not really a power. This is a responsibility. The federal government must provide the states with some some standards and oversight saying, okay, these are the types of radio communications. This is the type of crypto you'll be using. Now, you got to understand that even though you may have the crypto, you have to have the keys for how that encryption is being done. In other words, just because the militia, just because the states may have cryptography, and they may, and I don't mean cryptography as far as writing, crypto that will actually encrypt your data, that as it goes from one point to another, those two points have to have the same keys. In other words, you create this filter on one end and the filter on the other end so that they can actually talk to each other. This is how advanced our cryptography has gotten, our crypto equipment has gotten. And so when we create these communication lines, it doesn't mean anybody and everybody else out there, even if they've got the exact same equipment, can crack what we're doing. Now, in the new days, these are one-to-one transmissions, right? From one point to another point. If you happen to get in the middle and you can capture those transmissions, now you have the ability to run computer programs and trying to figure out what that code is so that you can make sense of it. And so this is what Russia's been doing. And you know, the governments that do, because they are so oppressive that they can't create and innovate for themselves, well, And the only way they create and innovate is via, you know, military or via very nefarious purposes. In other words, China doesn't care about really solving, you know, fundamental problems. I mean, they'll just buy up all the coal for their energy needs. They don't care about polluting or anything. If it kills people, that's okay. They have too many people anyway. So what they care about is they care about superiority, military power, and those things. So that's why these societies, just like Russia, you know, they were great in doing some innovation on the military, but they relied heavily upon stealing and spying technologies. This is how they, you know, accelerate. They try to leapfrog with America. But every time that they've leapfrogged, we've been able to actually leapfrog beyond them. And the reason we do that is because we actually have an open society where these things are being used in the civilian sector. Many times our leapfrogs came from our civilian sector. Anyway, so to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. So in other words, that Department of the Navy, if they have to deploy in the service of the United States, external to the United States, would be governing them. And the authority of training, or actually reserving to the states, respectively, the appointment of the officers, and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by the Constitution. So in other words, you know, they have the states have these powers and abilities, and they're supposed to actually have their own forces. You know, Madison talked about this in 1830 when he was dispelling these bad connotations of what he was doing and trying to qualify, you know, and assign nullification as this process to what he did when it was had nothing to do with that. He actually clarifies this, but one of the things he points out is each of the states has the ability to project deadly force. They have the forces to do, and they should have these forces. They need to be able to defend themselves because they are integral in defending the Union. The defense of the Union comes from all parts of the Union. You know, our U.S. military, the Navy itself, comes from the Union, and it has a very specific role. And the states also have a role in working and defending and, if necessary, sending up some of their forces out of the militia to support, when they're federalized, to support the overall Union. This is why when we go back to calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions, we should have forces on our southern border closing it, building the wall. Our militia needs to be building that wall. It shouldn't even be going out to a contract. We have a requirement because obviously there's nothing we're going to be able to do to stop people from just crossing that line. And we have a obligation to repel invasions. You know, you want to amend the Constitution? I don't. That's one thing I want to keep there because we understand the importance of sovereignty and the importance of a nation. So with that, we've already covered subsection 15. So when we come back, we'll get into exclusive legislation and the black cauldron that they're using in Washington, D.C. With that, folks, we will be back. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.